This is Songs to Discuss
with your daughter,
with Willa Krishnaswamy
and Ravi Krishnaswamy, a dad and daughter team.
Produced by Copilot Music and Sound.
Welcome back, listeners.
Hello there, Dad.
Hello, Willa.
Take two.
Again, this is the second episode in a row where I hit record. We spoke for 10 minutes and then I looked up and there was nothing there because the tracks were not enabled.
But it's a home-produced podcast, so
yeah, I'm
labor and love.
I mean, like, I'm the producer, talent, and engineer on this.
Daddy is the engineer and tech person behind the booth, and I just type up the questions and put it up onto Spotify and iTunes, so he does most of the work, courtesy of Dad. Let's give him a round of applause, everyone. Robbie
Krishnaswamy,
right here.
And we're coming to you a day late because we decided to take Father's Day off.
Yesterday. Yes, yesterday was Father's Day. He's a father. And yeah.
Father's Day's a big holiday for what may be the only dad and daughter music scholarship podcast out there.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know. So, today we are doing Toxic by Britney Spears.
And this is a little Father's Day present to me because it is right up there as one of my favorite pieces of recorded music in the history of music, which you would never think, knowing me, that it would be a Britney Spears song.
You're not into Britney Spears, correct?
No. I mean,
she's not in your top 10. She's not.
No, she's not in my top 20. But this song is
amazing. Well, right, I wouldn't say it's amazing, but like, it's pretty good. Before we get into the actual episode, we would like to say that we received our first voice message sent by Randy Blazak. How do you pronounce it?
I think so.
Blazak.
Probably as good as we can do.
Randy Blazak. It was heartwarming because this is our first voice message, and it was great. Thank you, Randy, for listening to our podcast. Thank you for taking it and respecting the content, despite it coming from sort of an 11-year-old. So half of the information is coming from me. No, I don't have much authority, but thank you. And you asked a pretty good question that my dad here can answer. So, Dad, what was the question?
Can you paraphrase the question and then
answer? Okay, so Randy asked, how are we able to legally monetize our podcast while also being able to play the music? So, you know, we play excerpts of the songs, we talk over the songs, we play other songs, we play different parts of the songs, we refer to the songs, we just play copyrighted music that was written by other people that is not our music, it's copyrighted. And so his question was, how do we play it legally and monetize it? So, Dad, let's get a quick explanation here.
Well, this is going to be a not a quick explanation, but a very long and convoluted and murky explanation.
So if you don't want this, skip ahead. Skip ahead. But
well, okay, so first of all, caveat, we do not obviously own the rights to the music samples that we're playing.
We are explicitly saying this. We do not own the music.
Okay. So music licensing is a very murky business, and it's particularly murky in the podcast space because that's a new medium and there hasn't been a lot of real norms and case law and processes figured out for it. You're telling me to speak more into the microphone?
Yeah.
I'm just like looking around the room like I'm in an auditorium speaking to a whole crowd. The core of our answer is that we understand a basic legal doctrine of fair use in how we use these samples, meaning the two of us are creating an educational discussion around the composition and production of music, and in order to create that learning space, we need to provide examples. And
I mean, imagine what this podcast would be like without actually hearing the song. Also for those people who are like people who listen to Bruce Springsteen and Guided by Voices, like you gotta hear the pop, you gotta hear the music.
So we play short excerpts. We never play a song full all the way through, and we're usually talking over the excerpts.
We usually fade in, fade out.
Yeah. And they're really used to demonstrate something. We're not using the music in the podcast to like make our podcast sound better or more exciting. We're actively demonstrating things about the songs and about the production and using the examples to illustrate the points that we're making. So we understand this to be fair use. Now, go call up any entertainment attorney and they will say, no, that's not a thing. Don't use copyrighted material in your podcast ever. And I get that because that's really the safe way to go.
Yeah. And so if you're listening to this and you're like, maybe I should back out and stop listening to this. These are sketchy people. We don't know who these are. Dad, how are you doing this legally? Like, please. I really want to keep the trust with these, our listeners. We are.
Well, I think, so I understand fair use to actually make our usage of these songs okay.
Because, like, say you're a teacher in a classroom and you need to play. Is that what
you're
saying?
Yeah, exactly. I play examples when I teach, when I give presentations on composition. And, you know, ultimately, we don't have a big business at stake. Sure, we are monetized, but we're monetized by Anchor.fm right now.
Which is our hosted podcast.
And that's the default. That's every podcast is monetized by Anchor until they grow enough to actually get real sponsors. And we don't really have real sponsors yet.
We'd like to say we have only 19 episodes, or this is our 19th episode. We have only 19 episodes. And if you're really, really curious about how much we've made with this sponsor segment, we've made only like $10. I mean, there's not much you can buy for $10 like this.
And if they want to sue us for half of our $10, we'll give them $5.
Take $5. I don't care.
Yeah. I certainly looked into this before we put our first episode up. But I will tell you that we've done some music supervision projects at Copilot, and it can take literally weeks to get a reply from a publisher or a label about like a project where you want to actually give them tens of thousands of dollars to use their music, and it can take weeks to reply. Now, what would our budget be for music in a podcast that makes $10?
Yeah.
So it just didn't seem,
and to get approval for every song in every episode, like.
Yeah, the other thing is we're not slandering the artists at all. In fact, we're only selecting material that we think is really well made and constructed and worth longer discussion. In some ways, in the marketing world, they talk about organic traffic or organic virality or organic spread, and we're helping these songs actually get out there organically because we like them and we're just telling our friends who happen to be listening to the podcast about the songs.
Yeah, definitely. So that's,
but there's also another, so okay, let's say they send us a cease and desist letter, because if they wouldn't sue us for money, first they would just send us a cease and desist letter,
which hasn't happened yet. Please stay listening, right. we're not
so if they do, I mean, it might be we take down one episode, or it might be we take down the whole podcast. But actually, as part of our hosting in Anchor, I don't know if you know this, but Anchor, I believe, is now partially owned or maybe fully owned by Spotify.
It is.
Okay. So I think when we signed up, we saw that the deal with using Anchor was that you could use any music in Spotify in your episode if you're just hosting it within Spotify. So if we received a cease and desist letter, we would just move our hosting strictly to Spotify.
Yeah.
And then we'd be in the clear.
Yeah, so
that's, but I mean, that's a pretty murky answer.
Sorry about that if that was like really like too much information, if you're like, I just want to listen to the episode. So but we gave you an explanation, and that's a little behind the scenes, I guess. But also please don't think we're sketchy. We are.
Don't rat us out.
Yeah, don't. I guess we're legally doing it. But also, Dad, you're saying we're like kind of promoting these songs, but for example, songs like Toxic, like a Harry Styles song, Beyonce, Positions, like those artists are out there. Like, we're not promoting them. Toxic has been in the world longer than I have, so.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the way that streaming pays artists now is that actually older artists really benefit from their material becoming popular later in their, you know, later on.
Yeah.
Or, you know, getting new interest, because every time it gets streamed, they get income. So, you know, a song like Toxic could get a little bit of a bump from our episode. So it's a symbiotic relationship. I think
what
artists,
does that mean, symbiotic?
Symbiotic is like when, you know, organisms that, you know, sort of in nature rely upon each other. So like, you know, we have a symbiotic relationship with Bernie, our dog,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, we go out and we buy him food and we give him a nice place to live, but he also gives us lots of love and care as a companion, and so we get something, we both get something out of the relationship, right?
Yeah.
It's not like he just eats his food and leaves and never spends time with us and cheers us up.
Yeah.
So artists and their fans and the critical media space have a symbiotic relationship. If nobody's talking about your music, nobody knows about your music. So, you know, I don't see this as being a, I don't really feel like we're exploiting these artists by talking about their songs here. I do think that, just to go on one tiny little rant, I do think that basically entertainment law has not caught up to how these symbiotic relationships work in media and music, and it's kind of messed up and doesn't really fit the way that the world works now. So
yeah.
We shouldn't be worried about doing this. There should just be a way to do it.
All right. Well, okay. If Randy wasn't looking for that long of an explanation, then we just wasted all of your guys' time. So.
Well, it's a little explainer on the murky legalities of music.
Yeah,
podcasts.
And a little rabbit hole. But yeah. This episode will be a little long. That's okay.
So we were talking about the benefits of Anchor, and we might as well unveil our new sponsor message.
That my dad just recorded today, so here's our sponsor segment.
Okay.
All right. After all that.
So
we're doing Toxic by Britney Spears. Just a little intro about Britney Spears. You all probably know her, though. I mean, who doesn't? Who is she, Dad?
Britney Spears is a pop artist that came up at a very young age in the late 90s, early 2000s, along with a wave of like very pop artists that kind of came in at the end of the grunge era. Like, there was like a few years where popular radio was all like guitars and dudes going like this, big riffs and stuff. And then, like, you know, these artists, Backstreet Boys, Spice Girls, Britney Spears, they kind of came in and ushered in this new era of pop. And, you know, she was not very popular with the critics. The critics thought she was kind of cheesy. But they didn't say that about this song. This critics all agreed that this is probably, you know, one of her best songs, if not her best songs, and one of the most interesting pieces of pop music production done in quite a long time.
Definitely.
Yeah. And it's kind of so, we are obviously coming to you on a Monday, not a Sunday, because yesterday was
Father's Day.
And Father's Day is a big holiday for us because we're a dad and daughter
team.
Yeah, so we took yesterday off so I could relax and do nothing on Father's Day. And so this is like a little Father's Day present because I love the production.
But anyway, also you mentioned Britney Spears' father, and there was a whole documentary about that just came out. About
That's a really dark segue. Tell us.
About Robert Spears.
Okay. Okay, tell us about this.
So, I don't actually know that much, but I mean, apparently her father is like this, like, she had so many lawsuits, like, she spent millions and millions of dollars on getting him to, like, back off. Like, apparently he controlled her career for a while, and maybe still does. Takes all the money, I don't know. I don't know too much in detail, but
so he tried to basically control her career.
Yeah.
And didn't he actually, like, didn't he go to court and get guardianship of her assets, say that she was like not fit to take care of herself as an adult?
I think so.
Because of like personal problems, problems with substances that she might have been having.
Yeah.
But he was very manipulative, and he basically tried to use her
to get money and stuff, yeah, and fame. And
so it would be like if I started like making you like record all these records up here and then putting them out and then like keeping all the money and being
That's
really
not happening.
Mean to you, right?
Yeah.
So tell the audience about there's an interesting connection with this story to the research project you were doing for your music class at school this year.
Yeah, so in music this year, we were tasked to pick a classical composer from, like, the Romantic era, you know, Mozart, Beethoven, those people. And I chose a woman who you probably don't know of. I mean, women composers who are even amazing aren't recognized enough. Shout out to them. But her name is Clara Weick-Schumann, and she was
Clara Weick?
I don't know how to pronounce it. She's German and, like, Austrian.
Yep.
And I don't know how to pronounce it. It's spelled W-I-E-C-K. So
I don't know.
Weick. I don't know. But I know how to pronounce her last name, which is Schumann. And there's a connection between Brittany and Clara because Clara's father, he owned an instrument shop, and he taught Clara, like, very rigid music lessons every day, like theory, composition, counterpoint, piano, violin, singing, all of that. And I mean, that's what his education made Clara so successful. But Clara Schumann's father had like kept a lot of the money, kept a lot of the fame, and when Clara wanted to marry one of Schumann's, not Schumann, when Clara wanted to marry her dad's former student, because he was a teacher, he refused because the student was not great at music, and he wasn't like the, well, I don't know, I'm not going to say that because I don't really know, but
are we talking about Robert Schumann?
Yeah. Clara's father had something against the person she fell in love with, Robert Schumann, so, and Robert Schumann had been a student of Clara's father. So they kind of had a connection, and then they got into this whole thing with a lawsuit just so Clara could marry Robert Schumann. And so something about music dads.
So she had to fight for her freedom, too.
Yeah, because Clara's dad was like, Clara was only made to be a successful classical musician. She can't be a housewife. She can't take care of herself. Blah, blah, blah.
So there you go, the Clara Schumann-Britney Spears connection.
I don't know why this makes you so I don't know why this makes you crack up. Like, I bet there's.
I think it's really. I just think it's like it's very interesting to see these kinds of stories sort of persist, and hopefully, you know, hopefully things are better for your generation.
Sorry about that.
Of female performers, entertainers, composers.
Hopefully.
And I promise I won't be a controlling dad.
And yeah, but, you know what would be nice, though, is if you could let us play an excerpt of the song, because we haven't done that and we're like 20 minutes
into
the episode.
Don't bore us, get to the chorus.
Yeah, so this is Toxic by Britney Spears.
Should I take it from the top?
Yep. Bollywood strings.
So cool. And then those nylon string guitars. Baby, can't you see
I'm calling? Britney's vocal fry. Pretty sure Max Martin worked on this.
He did not.
He did?
No, he worked with her on other songs.
Yeah.
Now listen to the effect that happens at the end of this vocal line.
I hear that.
I
it's
love
an
that.
Echo, reverb, whatever it is. I don't know. I like the guitar.
Yeah, I love the chord changes. They're all minor. There's a lot of chords in this song for a pop song.
I love that, like, this one.
That guitar.
Yeah.
That's what I call the James Bond guitar.
All right. Pause it. Let's just take a nod to Britney's vocals. They are not the best, but they are actually the best.
We've been arguing about this. Like
Britney Spears.
Is she a
like,
good singer or not?
She can't really, really sing, but, like, her singing is great. It matches her. I feel like it matches her persona. Like, she can't sing, but then again, like, she can sing enough to entertain us. Well, everyone who can talk can sing.
It's very stylized.
But, yeah, it's
just she's not a very, like...
Yeah.
She's not a very showy singer.
Yeah.
She's, like, about attitude, not about virtuosity.
Yeah.
Now... Actually, I want to do one thing before we start digging into the details.
I can't get into my questions.
Well, let's just talk about, like, sometimes we skip over, like, what the song is as a whole. Like so it's a, this was a big pop song. It charted very high. It won a Grammy Award for Best Dance Pop Song or whatever the category was called at that point.
Check.
I think it was, like, Best Dance Pop. Won a Grammy, charted very high, had a really entertaining video, which I don't think you've seen.
Nope.
Which is unusual for this podcast. Usually you've spied the video for a bit. But what's the song about?
It's about Britney Spears and this guy who is toxic.
Okay.
That she likes, but it's like a toxic, intoxicated relationship.
Right, so it is a song. It's like a romantic song, but it's about how, like, she's attracted to something that's toxic, might be poisonous, and might harm you. So she's, like, attracted to this person that's ultimately going to be bad for her.
Yeah. I saw your lips moving, but you weren't speaking.
Yeah,
you were going to say something, and then you just, like, backed out.
It's got a, so it's kind of, like, the vibe is cool. Like, it's not, like...
I wouldn't say it's cool as in, like, chilling on a boat in the summer in a yacht. I'd say it's cool as in, like, mysterious and, like...
And she's, like...
I always think of beige when I think of this song. I don't think of, like, pink. I think of
You think
beige.
Of beige?
Yeah.
There's your synesthesia for the day.
Beige and blue.
That's so odd.
Because blue is, like, the color on the cover.
So she's... I think in the arc of her career, too, this song is interesting because her first couple singles, like, she kind of comes out as this, like, sort of very, like, innocent, like, I don't know. Her look is, like, very, like, I'm this innocent Midwestern girl.
Hit me, baby, one more time.
Like, cute. And then this is sort of like she's
Sorry,
basically...
Sorry, I didn't mean to say that.
She's
that,
basically kind of making herself a little older here and showing some independence and showing some, like danger. Like, she's willing to take on some danger. And I think that that's reflected conceptually in the production. We'll get to that.
Dun, dun.
Like, it feels adventurous.
Yeah.
Like, Hit Me Baby One More Time is, like, just, like, a fun song.
How was I supposed to know? I don't know how I guess.
Is that Hit Me Baby One More Time?
It's called Baby One More Time.
Baby One More Time. That's your vocal fry.
How does it go again? Like,
well, let's talk about toxic. What are your questions?
Okay. So, during the chords, not the chorus, during the chorus, like, a few seconds after that, like, there's, like, something that's, like, dun, 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 that you called, like, the James Bond guitar.
Oh, yeah.
What is that? Like, is that, like, even a guitar? Like, it sounds like some sort of, like, string. Like, can you play it? Like, it sounds very mysterious and...
Okay.
Like, it's like, dun, dun, like, right after.
Let's see.
That was it. Okay, here, coming in. Not this. Ready? This one.
Yeah.
That doesn't... It's like... It's so interesting. It really reflects how, like, pop has kind of evolved, because I feel like I wouldn't hear something with that, like, very rich, whatever that is, guitar, string, whatever arrangement, like, on the radio right now. Like what is it? Like...
Okay, so... The simple answer is it's an electric guitar.
Oh, it's electric.
Played low. Like, probably a Fender Telecaster with, like, a single coil pickup going into, like, a tube amp, like a Fender Twin or something like that, with a little bit of vibrato on it. And we've talked about vibrato before here.
Yep.
And lots of reverb. Okay.
Definitely.
But that's, like, the simple answer. And I feel like when you're talking about something like that guitar, if you just describe how it's made, you kind of miss the point of it. Like how
So wait, then what's the point?
How it's made is unremarkable. The point is that specific combination of sounds, I think, really reads to most listeners as... it refers to one of two things for me, either spaghetti westerns or James Bond.
What is spaghetti westerns?
Spaghetti westerns are movies from the, like, the 60s, 70s, made by a couple of Italian directors.
Before you continue, the image that popped into my head when I heard you say spaghetti westerns is like a cowboy, like a western cowboy on a horse with a lasso, and the lasso is slaying meatballs and spaghetti. I just want to put something funny out there. So continue on the spaghetti westerns.
Okay, so it was like a genre of film, and they all used this one film composer who was very adventurous in his sounds, and he kind of developed this really interesting musical language for the films, and he used these guitars a lot. The film and composer I'm thinking specifically about are The Good and Bad and the Ugly, which was directed by Sergio Leone, and the score is by Ennio Morricone, who is kind of like one of the great creative film composers.
Ennio Morricone.
So here's some of the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly theme, where he brings in this kind of guitar.
I wouldn't say it's really, really similar, but
there. Hear it?
That thing. That is it. That is it.
Like the sound and the tone, the way it's played.
And the way they use it. Like,
yep.
Play the Britney Spears part with that again. Did you guys hear that? Did you folks on the other end hear that?
Okay, let me play the Britney Spears again. Let's see.
Okay, it's coming.
Here we go. Same exact hammer.
It's like so similar. It's creepy similar.
And the way it kind of comes in. As like a counter melody.
I'm growing to like this song more.
And then the other example is, whoa, Spotify is showing me a video while I'm trying to do this. The other example is James Bond. And that's, I think, an even more direct reference that Toxic is taking. And this is, so we're going now from westerns
to James Bond
spy films.
But he's English, right?
Hear that?
Oh my god, Dad, you're a genius. You find all these freaky, creepy influences. Like, this is creepily creepy.
I think the Toxic riff really refers to that James Bond riff by going low on the guitar, just the way that the James Bond goes right to the bottom of the register, that low open.
Dad, toxic, this, the bad, the good, and the ugly, or whatever it was, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And then this James Bond, this is, like, freakily creepy. Like, it's, like, so similar.
So,
like, it's either they're directly referencing it, or they're just ripping off of it. Wait, that's the same thing.
Yeah, but so like, okay,
I'm gonna try to read your mind. Are you about to say that are you about to go into a whole segue about how much pop culture and the past has such an influence on the current pop culture? Is that what you're gonna say?
Well, sort of. Yeah. Okay. So the I think culture. There's like a language of cultural references that we all grow up with, kind of like embedded in our ears, almost like language. And if you can, and there's a few sounds like that sound, that guitar sound, where you really can create, I think, a lot of feeling and imagery for the listener just by using that sound in your song. It can take you to a different place. So, like, I guess the question I ask you is, like, is that just, did they just happen to use an electric guitar there for, like, a pretty counter melody in the song? Or are they using that sound to kind of, like, take Britney Spears out of her, like, sheltered, suburban, nice girl singles era into this new dangerous world as an artist?
Well, I don't really know Britney Spears that well.
Okay.
but I mean, I don't know. She seems very, maybe can't just, like, that seems very, like, going into new territory, I guess. But I don't, yeah. I don't know what, I don't know. I only know, like, a few of her songs. But I like Oops, I Did It Again.
I would argue that that guitar riff really works on, like, multiple, like, it works on a musical level to support the, to get you from, you know, one section to another section, but it also works on a sort of more semiotic level of, like...
What's semiotics again? I'm sorry.
Like, it's like the study of the creation of meaning. It's kind of comes out of linguistics and the study of language. But like I'm arguing there's a whole layer of meaning to that guitar riff that's like,
I don't know, possibly, probably
on a meta level.
I bet they're trying to bring her out of, like, I'd have to go with your theory.
Okay, I've convinced you.
But right, yes, good. The next question is a question I am very excited about that I'm not entirely sure you prepared for.
Uh-oh.
But I think you will be. So, as you listeners know, we love influences on this podcast. We are obsessed with talking about influences. What influenced this? Where does this sound come from? Is this artist mimicking this? And blah, blah, blah. And as we just heard some James Bond influence / spaghetti, Italian spaghetti western influence. But we are doing something new today that I'm hoping will become a new trend. Has this song influenced future songs? Not what influenced this song, but is this song now an influence? And I bet this could have been cool for past songs, but this song is definitely like 16 years old, 15 years old or something. So has this song influenced other songs? Is this song now an influence for another song? Like, is there possibly any way you found a maybe sort of influence? Has anybody since then put out a song similar, like, to this song? Like, with maybe some similar, like, vocal technique, with similar strings, with similar, dun-dun-dun, like, I don't know, beat. Like, I just wanted to go a different path here today. Instead of talking really deeply about the influences, can we see if this song influenced the future and the now? Take it away.
Okay.
So. That question probably overwhelmed you.
Yeah, so we paused the recording and I looked for a while, and then Willow watched the video for the first time of Toxic. I didn't find any songs that were like totally directly inspired, although...
But did it kind of inspire like maybe an era, maybe like strings and pop? Or,
well,
I don't know.
Well, what I will say is that there have been a number of hip-hop tracks that have sampled Bollywood since that song came out, and that's one of the first and most high-profile examples of sampling Bollywood. So there were just no examples that were great to play or appropriate to play lyrically. So there you are. Okay, what'd you think of the video?
That was kind of a dud. Oh, it's a crazy video.
What's the theme of the video?
Well, it starts with Britney Spears on a plane, in a plane. And then she grabs this person, takes him into the bathroom, takes his mask off him, and he's like a different person. Like, he looks like a different person. And then something weird happens. Then there's this character with, like, red hair, and starts, like, rolling on him. It's hard to explain. You guys should go watch the video if you haven't already.
So there's a really subtle, and I don't want to overthink it too much, but there's a really subtle, like, dark element to how the Bollywood strings are used in the production of this song. I don't think the producers really intended it, but there's something dark. What I mean by dark is there's a history in our culture, particularly like in early popular music and film, to portray like the person from another culture, maybe with darker skin, as like either a villain or a dangerous person or a mysterious person or an exotic person.
Mm-hmm.
And her song is dealing with this. She's dealing with this sort of dangerous other person. She says dangerous. It's like a prominent word in the song. And I think that there's a way that like these strings, which clearly come out of Indian culture, clearly like make you think of
people
who are from another country with darker skin, and that this kind of like matched to this sense of danger or sense of like a villain or a I'm not saying that the song is overtly racist.
Is it?
But
it could be.
There's you could really analyze it that way.
I see what you're saying, because, first of all, if you've been listening and you don't know what Bollywood is, you probably do. Can you just tell us what Bollywood
is? Okay, so Bollywood, so India, the world's largest democracy, it naturally sprung up a big film industry in India.
Around like Hollywood, but...
Yeah, and it sprung up in Bombay, and so they started to call it Bollywood. And what happened was, I think early Indian filmmakers were really influenced by the musicals that came out of the U.S. in the 30s, 40s, 50s. And I think that they just kind of ran with the musical thing. And they've made musicals in India ever since. Whereas, like, the U.S. film industry kind of lost interest in musicals in the 60s and 70s. And 80s and 90s.
Was Singin' in the Rain like kind of the last big musical?
It was like one of, you know, a later in the boom, yeah. And then they've come back here and there. I mean, we just watched an amazing film musical yesterday. Saturday, I guess, in the Heights. So they haven't completely gone away, but like India just like got into musicals and then stayed there. And they've been making musicals for 50 years now. And they barely make other films. I mean, they do make other films, but most of what they make in India are musicals. And in the 60s and 70s, the musicals sort of really got very global in their sound. They took a lot of influences from American rock, from music from Latin America. They're very eclectic scores, but one of the highlights that is captured in the sample that you hear in this song is the fact that they had these big, you know, string sections like you'd have in an American film score, but they would have the string players because, you know, violins are not fretted.
Mm-hmm.
You know what frets are, right? They set the pitch.
No, I actually don't.
Okay, so like on a guitar, you have frets, which means that when you put your fingers down...
oh, yeah, those like little like dents, I
guess. Yeah, they tune the note to the Western scale.
Yep. Let me just...
Let me finish this thought. But violins, cellos are not fretted, so you can put your finger wherever and you can make any pitch you want. And what they did in these Bollywood film scores is they had these beautiful string sections playing with microtonal melodies that were really influenced by Indian classical music. So
now, if this just to say, if this seems really, really dense, I'm with you. This is very dense material.
Have I lost you? My
co? No. I'm just saying, like, I have more questions.
The point is like an American orchestra or a British orchestra might play it ba 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 ba, like right on the pitch, but an Indian string section, they're hearing all of these, like, these pitches in between our pitches. Indian music plays with, you know, the distance between each note is like a long and winding road, and it can have lots of different places where it rests before it actually hits the pitch. So it's like, wah, wah, it's like really bendy.
I just want to go back to your analysis. Do you think this song is racist?
I don't think the song is overtly racist, but I think that you could analyze the use of the... I think you could analyze the production as playing upon these sort of...
You could interpret it that
regressive,
way.
Regressive, right? Exoticist notions of, like, the dangerous other.
You just said two words that I don't know.
Well, regressive, like, sort of... It's not a forward-looking thing to think that people from other countries are naturally going to be scary villains. That's kind of an old-fashioned notion.
And then the other word you said.
Exoticist, which is just what I'm saying. Like, that the other, the exotic other, is mysterious and dangerous. I think you can hear it that way.
I didn't mean to talk over you. I didn't mean to just be like, you could interpret it that way. Yeah. Like, I'm so smart. But I think you could interpret it.
If I thought it was a song that was doing, like damage to the world, I wouldn't be talking about it on this podcast. I think it's a fun pop song. I think it happens to play with some darker, cliches that reside within our ears. But it does it with great effect, and it's a lot of fun. And we don't have to take every pop song super seriously as being something that is supposed to build a better world.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on. Whew, that was a lot to take in.
Yeah.
Okay, so getting back to the questions, which we got derailed very quickly, Father, mm-hmm. You.
Sorry, I'm drinking coffee, that's why.
So, my next question is, in the bridge, we actually haven't heard the bridge, so, mm-hmm. I'm gonna play the bridge, and you guys are gonna hear this weird thing that warps and distorts and makes Britney Spears' voice sound so weird, and you're gonna wonder what it is, just like me, and we're gonna find out, and you're gonna find out that's probably not a vocoder, because I don't think it's a vocoder. So, here it is, the bridge of Toxic. Coming at you right now. Oh. Do you hear that? She's literally like, listen, like. This part is interesting, but not what I'm talking about. She has very big synths. Like, what is that? Like, she's literally like, yeah, like, what? Like, I'm just, like, wondering, like, what the heck
that is.
Because I know it's not a vocoder. And, like, I don't know, it's I'm not gonna say it's wacky, but like, doesn't it seem wacky and quirky?
Yeah, it's not, like, I mean, it's not a vocoder. It sounds like they're pitching it up or playing with the formants and using auto-tune.
What are formants?
Formants are, so when you put your voice through software on the computer, it analyzes it and it splits, like most vocal processing, like plugins like auto-tune will split up the information in the voice into like several different categories of sound. One is the pitch information, another is the formant, which is sort of like the timbre of it, and another is like the noise element.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's got like a little processing machine.
So like if you play with the formants, what you can do is you can keep the pitch of a voice, but you can make the voice sound like younger or older. And I think it's like they're moving up the formants on her voice, so it's like, hey, family, la, la, la. It's like making her sound.
So this actually is an effect. They were just doing all these things in the studio.
Oh, it's processing her voice.
Yeah, like.
And I think they're moving some stuff during that phrase too. Honestly, there's so many things that are interesting ear candy in the production of this. Uh-oh, Bernie.
Can you?
Okay, we fixed that problem.
Did you edit it out?
Yeah. So.
You promise you edit it?
There's a lot of interesting ear candy, and some of it I know exactly how they made it, and some of it I don't know how they made it at all. And the vocal stuff, I think, I don't know exactly what they did.
Well, obviously you won't know exactly, because you weren't in the booth with them or anything, but like...
But they were really using all the latest tools. This came out in 2003. This song is old enough to drive. This song is just about old enough to vote.
This song is older than me. This song is like, it's way older than me. Was it a big radio hit?
It was a huge radio hit.
Wow.
So, sorry, your mic was starting to wilt.
All right.
So, you know, as a person who works in music production too, like, this was around the time when everything really started to go inside the box. Do you know what inside the box means?
Inside the computer?
Yeah. So, like, that's how we talk about it in production for advertising, at least. Like, other music production contexts. Like, is it in the box or out of the box? Like, when I started writing, I had a studio that was wired up with all these different synthesizers, and I had, like, a separate machine that recorded audio in addition to the computer so that I could have enough tracks. And now, like, then everything started to... I had a separate sampler. Everything started to go into the computer, and when it got into the computer, all of a sudden you could just chop things up and mix things up and do really random things with your sound that were very hard to do efficiently in the past. And this song totally exemplifies that sound for me. Like what
Dictionary man, what does exemplify mean?
Like it's a great example of that kind of cut and paste computer mentality,
yeah, because,
to production.
So like, this is a question. Since it's like very like before it gets back into the regular Britney Spears voice.
Yeah.
That's so it's all digital. There are like controls on the computer where you can turn this up, this down, this notch out, this filter.
Oh yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot more now than there were in 2003, but this is probably, they were probably using like a very early version of auto-tune and probably putting it into a sampler.
We actually listened to the video of her without auto-tune.
Yes, that's right. Which is actually, it's a pretty good performance, I think. It's better than you would expect.
But there were some parts where she was like, eh, this will be fixed with auto-tune.
Should we play some of that?
Let's get to my next question.
Okay,
that's going to lead us into another rabbit hole about, like...
Auto-tune.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, we're back on the strings. So, I know you're very excited to talk about the strings more with us.
It's my favorite.
But I'm going to say... So, in the second verse, there is a very interesting string part that is very mysterious that I'm going to play for you guys right now. And I want to know where it comes from and why it is so mysterious. Now, don't tell us about the strings from the chorus. Like, tell us about this string. So, ready, hear it. Coming up. That is so unexpected and so mysterious. I just love it. It's like, da-na, da-na. Like, I really want to know, like.
I feel like I'm forbidden to, you have forbidden me from answering this correctly.
Really?
Because I'm going to break your rule.
Okay, never mind. Break my rule.
It's the chorus, it's the hook, reversed. Da, 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 da. Da, 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 da.
Is there any way you could play this on your keyboard?
So, okay, hold on a sec. So I grabbed the part of the actual Bollywood song that was sampled, and I just hacked together the string sample and then hacked together a reverse version. Now listen to this example.
Okay, so is this... Oh.
That's the sample.
Yeah.
Na, na, na,
yeah.
And then... Da, 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 da.
Yeah, okay, so wait. So the part in the chorus, no, the part in the second verse where she's like, this part, that's basically, that part is basically this in reverse.
Yep.
It sounds so much more mysterious. I mean, those notes are really similar. It's like, it's so mysterious. I really like that second verse.
Well, so it's interesting because the sample going forward starts on the 5. Da, and then ends on the 1, so it resolves. Da, 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 da. And then the one that's more mysterious starts on the 1 and then ends on the 5,
da,
unresolved.
Da.
Da, 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 da. It's like a question.
I like it.
And the other one's like an answer. But also, I just want to recognize that they not only grabbed those strings, but also the strings that you hear that go dun 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 dun, those are from the same song. I think we should actually listen to the song.
So the song, when you say the song, do you mean the song that influenced this with the strings?
Yeah.
So the vocals obviously won't sound like Britney Spears.
No, this is a song from a Bollywood movie from the early 1980s, and the song is called "Tira Mira Beach Mine," and the singer is Lata Mangeshkar and Balasubramaniam. And Lata Mangeshkar, I know you're really into Guinness Book of World Records, right?
Mm-hmm.
She is the most recorded voice in the history.
Wait, what?
Because she's like every Bollywood movie practically for like 40, 50 years. When you hear when the woman starts singing... When the woman starts singing on screen, it's her voice. They use and they call that the playback singer in Bollywood. So here's the song that was actually sampled.
So in history, she's the most recorded.
Yeah. And it's a little lower pitch, like it's like a half step below. Na na na. They took the ba. Banana, and then they put it together. They like sampled two parts of that and stuck them together.
This is so creepy. They're so similar.
Now listen.
Oh my god! My eyes are bulging out of my head. Okay, you can pause it now.
Let's just listen to Lata Mangeshkar for a sec.
Okay.
Doesn't she have a beautiful voice?
Beautiful, yeah.
You hear how those strings really glide?
They're just like, wow, this, how did you find this song? It's just so similar.
It's not similar, it's sampled.
It's not similar, it's sampled.
Yeah.
They took these samples.
Yep. It's interesting that
My jaw is dropping.
And it's interesting that we started out the show with a discussion about copyright and using copywritten recordings, because I don't know if they, I don't know if they cleared these samples or not. They probably did.
But they could not have.
But theoretically, the composer of this song from the Bollywood soundtrack should be getting royalties every time Toxic is played, if the sample was cleared properly. And actually, fair use is the real point at which I think copyright has not caught up to the way people make music and sound, is that it hasn't really made it easier, any easier over the years, for people to sample other recordings and create new works out of them, which is what they did here.
Whoa! Okay. Okay, we're getting somewhere now.
One other thing I want to point out that's just an interesting aside is that...
About what?
About this... About Lata Mangeshkar.
Mm-hmm.
Is that she has such a clear, like, high nasally voice.
What does nasally mean?
Like, it almost sounds like it's coming out of her nose. Yeah. Like, it doesn't it sound like it's coming out of her nose almost?
I mean, I wasn't really paying attention to listen to that, but I guess so.
But it's isn't it such a contrast to Britney Spears, who's total vocal fry?
Dangerous. Yeah, she is, like, obsessed. Do an impression of her.
No, you do the impression.
No, do the impression.
No, nobody wants to hear Dad do a Britney Spears impression. They want to hear Willie.
I think that would be hysterical.
Okay, next question.
Well, my next question is another string question that you already answered. So we done, bro.
All right. Well, then, what are we talking about next week?
Well, before we do that, just announcing, and we say this like every 5 episodes, I guess. If you don't follow us on Instagram at Songs Discuss or on Facebook at Songs Discuss, make sure you go follow us there. We could use your support. And also, start your own podcast on Anchor, guys. Like,
yeah.
You have all the tools. You don't even need a professional microphone. You can just record on your iPhone. And also, we set up that public playlist on Spotify. If you search Songs to Discuss with Your Daughter, it's got all the songs, correct? It's public.
Yep, it's public,
even from Love Language all the way.
Yeah, away. and we posted a link in our Facebook page.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, you did. Okay, great. So
what are we
next
talking?
Episode is episode 20,
and it's the final episode of season 2.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, we're getting through 2 seasons. Fist bump.
Yeah, as you guys know, we're kind of busy. My dad's getting a PhD, and we're kind of busy, so we've chunked the seasons into 10 episodes a season, then we take a break, come back, and so this is going to be our second season. We are actually closing out the season with the same artist we started it with. We are doing a Sour album review. We've never done an album review before.
Yeah.
So, Dad, tell us. So we started the season with talking about Driver's License
and then
by Olivia Rodrigo. And
then she dropped her full album, and it's really good.
It was actually supposed to be an EP, but she extended it.
So we're going to do...
LP.
We're going to break it down.
Deep dive. What are the patterns? What's going on? But we're not going to talk about Driver's License, because we already talked about that, and I can't stand that song anymore.
Okay.
Like, it's so overplayed, man. Like... So, meet us here next time.
All right.
Bye-bye.